Thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We hope you had a great Easter, a fantastic Passover. Whatever you celebrated, I hope it went well. Welcome back to the show. This is Monday, and we're hoping for a good one. We're at 312-981-7200.
I would like to discuss Easter, but we can do that later, because all weekend long, I was completely jelly of you, because you went to watch SNL live.
Yeah.
I never have done that. You had not either.
I'd never been there for the broadcast of a show. I'd been to 30 Rock before for a couple of things, but I'd never watched them do Saturday Night Live. And here's what happened. I wasn't sure this was going to be a good thing or not, but it ended up being a really good thing and a very strange thing, and I will explain. Colin Jost, who does
Weekend Update. Do you want me to stall for you while you do a nice little clearing there?
Colin Jost, who does Weekend Update, has been a guest on our show a couple of times. And the last time Colin was on with us last summer, he said, hey, if you guys are ever in New York and you want tickets to the show, don't hesitate. Let me know. I'll see what I can do.
He didn't really mean that, though.
Well, it was one of those show business things that people say.
I say, let's have lunch.
Yeah,
you don't mean it.
So I was torn. I'm like, he's just saying that. He's just being nice. But as it turned out, because Kylie goes to school in New York, I was gonna surprise her, and Terry and Reese came along, and I just thought, let's see if this is real or not. So I sent Colin an email, and he and I have exchanged a note or two over the last year or so. And I'm like, look, I know it's one of those things that people say, if you can get us in, we'd love to come and see it, but if not, don't even think about it. It's fine.
And he can always say no.
Yeah, there's no harm in that, right? So he sends me a note back right away, very apologetic, saying, Bill, I just gave the tickets away. He gets 5 tickets per show. I just gave my tickets away to a charity.
What a good guy.
What a good guy. And, stupid charity. You can't go. Oh, man.
Take them back.
Come on. So I said, hey, no, that's fine. It's New York. We'll find something to do. There are other things to do. He goes, no. He goes, why don't you do this? Come and hang out in my dressing room during the show. You guys can watch from my dressing room. There's a TV in there, and you can meet some of the cast and stuff. So
you were apprehensive because you said to me, this is the option. You know, he gave away his tickets to charity. Darn charity.
Stupid charity.
And, I could watch it in his dressing room, but is that going to be any good?
Watching TV.
I'm like, yeah, but you can meet people and you're there in the hustle and the bustle.
You can also go through his stuff and know he can't catch you.
Oh, we did that.
He'll be on TV at
the
time.
We did that. And one of a former Blackhawk had visited him a few weeks ago and left a Blackhawk jersey, and that was a fun thing to steal. I got a Boland jersey now. So, all right. So, yes, Terry and I decide we're not going to tell the girls until we're in New York and that it's all set up.
Killer.
So
even Reese didn't know?
No. So they were like hyperventilating because, you know, it's their favorite show and we're going to get to see, you know, the backstage and what goes on. All right. So we go in on Saturday. They treat us like gold from the very first person that we meet at 30 Rock to get us upstairs. And they just treat us so nice. And we go upstairs. Now, all this is leading towards what is one of the most strange, unexplained moments of my life.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
Wait till you hear this, because it's been going over in my head since Saturday, and I don't understand it. Neither does my family. We meet several members of the cast at various times. Colin shares a dressing room with Michael Che, who also does Weekend Update. He's really nice. There's other people in there. A couple of friends of theirs are writers. There's a girl who's a writer for Unbreakable, Kimmy Schmidt.
Can I interrupt you for
yes.
a second? When you say in a dressing room and there are a bunch of you in there,
yes.
how big is it?
It's roughly the size. I know people listening to the show don't know the size of Wendy in my office, but it's the size of our office.
Enough to fit like 3 desks.
It's, you know, neither of them have a full-on desk. It's kind of a countertop that they also use. They put their makeup on in there. And then there's pictures all over that Michael Che explained to me are all scenes that either he or Colin or both of them have had pitched and are on air. Because it's a very strange assortment of pictures. There's like 30 pictures and you go, there's like no rhyme or reason at all to these scenes until he explained. Those are all scenes that they pitched and got on the air. So every time they get a scene on, they add another picture to their wall.
Their trophy wall.
Yeah, there's a trophy wall. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. But they're so casual, like... Before the show, you keep hearing in the dressing room, We got there about a half an hour prior to taping. So that's 11 o'clock New York time.
It wasn't even taped. It was live all over
right.
the country
it
list.
Was for the first time, it was live everywhere. So there's a woman's voice who keeps going, 25 minutes to air, 22 minutes to, you know, every 2 or 3 minutes she chimes in. So we're talking to Michael Che beforehand, and that lady keeps interrupting with how many minutes to air. And he goes, oh, man, I got to do the warm-up. So he bolts out, and then all of a sudden you see him on the monitor doing the crowd warm-up, you know, a minute later.
Oh, he's the guy who warms
them up. Yeah, and he does it every week. I didn't know that because I asked him later. I go, do you guys rotate? Because there's other stand-ups on the show. You know, Pete Davidson does stand-up. He goes, no, I do it. And he goes, and I really pride myself on doing a new 5 minutes every week. I go out of my way to make sure it's new material
awesome.
Every week. So, yeah, so that was nice. And there's, like, so many little inside things that you don't think about when you're watching the show, like that opening where Jimmy Fallon is singing in the hallways, that, I mean, that was right where we were right outside there. That was right past the dressing room.
I rewound that 3 times to see if I could see you. Cause I thought he's sitting in Colin Jost's dressing room.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for Bill.
Well, they warned us a little bit, you know, they said cameras coming through, you know, just prior to, so don't just walk out. Although the girls at some point during the show, the girls had used the bathroom and they go out and the person who helped them find the bathroom was Cecily Strong, who was in the next scene. She was just standing out there waiting to go on stage. And the girls come out and they go, do you know where the restroom is? And they talked for a little bit and she walked them down the hall to the bathroom.
All right. First of all, how could they not be nervous?
There wasn't any sense of nervousness from anybody. Colin was in the dressing room with us 2 minutes before he was doing update, talking about just like the Blackhawks game, because the Hawks had just lost 5-0.
Terribly.
And we're joking around about the Blackhawks game. And just like, and then 90 seconds later, he was on national television doing weekend update with not even a tinge of nerves, nothing.
See, that blows my mind. We don't get nervous here because we do it every day and we're
right.
used to it.
Right.
Although I will tell you, like when we go to a different time or we go to a different studio, I get a little nervous because you're out of your element.
Yeah.
So
right.
I guess they get used to it, but it's live television.
Well,
that's a big difference.
The thing that was making everyone just not nervous, but they were sitting up a little straighter and paying extra attention. And I guess this was publicized. This was the first SNL that was on live nationwide at the same time. Normally, the West Coast, it's not live there. It's taped in New York at 11:30 New York time. We see it live in Chicago at 10:30, but they don't see it. They see it on delay on the West Coast, and it's already happened, you know. But this was the first time they were showing it nationwide, so it would have aired at, that would be 8:30, I guess, Pacific time.
Oh, yeah.
So because of that, the scene with Melissa McCarthy was not in New York. She was not in New York. That scene was not in New York. They did that on a soundstage in Los Angeles.
All right. A, that's super cool because
yeah.
it looked like she was right there.
Yeah. They didn't. I don't know that anyone had talked about that, but.
And so, because you heard people laughing like the audience, did they just have a big screen
yeah,
where
they
showed
it? It on all the monitors there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because that was my first question. Did you meet Melissa McCarthy?
No, she wasn't there. She
that
was not
blows
there.
My mind.
She was not there. All right. All this is leading to one of the strangest things that's ever happened to me, and I'll explain what that is next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Tease.
All right. It was a very strange weekend, a wonderful weekend in New York. I went to see my daughter, Kylie, along with my wife, Terry, and my other daughter, Reese. And we got tickets, thanks to Colin Jost, who is one of the anchors on Weekend Update. Got to sit in his dressing room and watch the show with he and Michael Che, his co-anchor, who did great running commentary throughout the show, little bits and pieces, little fun facts about things. And then there were some other writers that were back there and a friend or two of Colin's and of Michael's. All right. When the show is over, they say, do you want to go down and meet some of the rest of the cast, right? And we did. And they said, and we'll also show you around. You can, you know, take a look at the, we could have our picture taken on the stage, which we did.
How cool
which was really
is
fun.
That?
I know. It
they do
like,
that with everyone or just you because you were a special friend?
They don't do it with everyone, but if you're a guest of any of the other people on the show, they afford you that opportunity to go down. So there's a hallway that goes from the writer's office and then a small staircase that goes to where the stage is. And it's a long, thin hallway. And as soon as we get into it, all of a sudden some of the cast members start coming our way and then we're introduced to them. So we met Beck Bennett was the first one through.
I love him.
Very, very nice guy. Very humble, very nice guy. Adie Bryant was there.
Love her.
So the girls are huge fans. So they had their picture taken, and they talked to her for a little
bit. And they were all approachable and cool?
Every one of them.
Oh, my God.
Every single one of them. And it was just, it was great.
Did Leslie Jones try and grab you?
I did not see Leslie Jones. My daughters did. But
I would have loved if you did, because I wanted to. She'd be like, oh, looking good.
Yeah, that
Colin who?
Jimmy Fallon was there.
Did you meet him?
There was a line of people to have a picture taken, and the people on the show were just coming through kind of fast and furious, so I didn't need to. I mean, I would have certainly said hello, but I didn't. But Steve Higgins, who is his announcer on The Tonight Show, he's like his Ed McMahon, he was there, and I talked to him for a while. He was really nice. All right, now for the moment that I cannot understand. The musical guest on the show was Harry Styles.
Yes.
Harry Styles is in the group One Direction.
Was,
and now
right?
he does solo work. Yeah. And I would say that Harry Styles' target audience are girls in their late teens. Wouldn't you agree?
From One Direction, yeah.
Right. Now he's broadening his scope a little bit, but it's still, I would say his target audience is younger women.
Yeah,
for
you'd
the most
be
part.
Right.
In the hallway are both of my daughters, who are younger women, and a couple of other younger women. And Harry Styles is walking by, and they're all just kind of acknowledging him and saying things like good show and stuff like that. And as he approaches, I do the set. I just go, hey, Harry, good, nice show. And he stops, and he looks, and he gets this huge smile on his face and goes, oh, thank you. That means so much to me. He goes, you know, how did the Mick Jagger thing play out? Because in one scene he
was awesome.
Mick Jagger. I go, oh, I thought you did a really good job. I go, and you know, it's tough because Jimmy Fallon's right next to you and he does a good Mick Jagger, but I thought you did a really good job. He goes, oh, thanks. I was so nervous about that. He goes, did you think the second song was a bit long? Because when they told me which, and he's just talking to me and it's not ending anytime soon. He's just chatting away.
Because you're not a little girl. It means more coming from you.
I think he thought I was someone else because he was being polite to everybody in the line and just a quick head nod and then going through. But, like, he saw me, and he's like, oh, he's here, and he's talking to me for...
Did he think you were Dana Carvey?
I don't know who he thought I was, but whoever it was, and it never occurred to him, oh, I don't think this guy... Like, he was genuinely interested in, like, what I had to say. And then I look over at both my daughters and my wife, and they both had their own versions of this. What? Like, all three of them are like, how does this happen?
But seriously, it means more coming from a guy because... Little girls and young women think he's great,
right.
So they're going to love
they're
him
say
regardless.
Great about anything, right?
Because when I love when a woman is a fan of mine, because
yeah.
It's like, oh, that means something, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, 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 sure.
So I think that either that or he thought you were Dana Carvey.
I'm convinced he thinks I was somebody else, but he wasn't sure who I was, but... He needed to be nice. He didn't need to be nice to me, obviously, but he was going so out of his way to talk about, you know, things. And I go, this is it. Like, I'm going to be the one who has to end this because he's not going to, he just wants to talk to me about, and I was fine with it. I liked him. He was a very nice guy.
He exudes sexiness. Can I just tell you? I've never been.
Didn't mention that to him, but yeah.
Then he wouldn't have talked to you anymore.
Game over.
Right.
Harry, you, by the way, are a very sexy man. Just
my
say that.
God. He was so good in the soldier bit.
Now that, can I tell you a little problem with that? He refused to put
glue.
Yeah.
Because
you know
his
this?
Beard was coming off.
Did you know that? Because
no,
they told us this backstage. They go, the wardrobe people are furious with him because he won't put the wax stuff on to keep the mustache on, and it keeps falling off.
Because he has beautiful skin.
They were all very upset with him about that.
Well, it came off, and it was flapping, and I don't know that he was told I'm not wearing that stuff, but he didn't even, like, go to push it back
right.
on. He just kind of left it flapping.
I know.
One of the best SNLs I've
yeah,
seen in
was,
quite some time.
It was a fun episode. It
and
really
a little
was.
Trivia piece that we talked about, you wowed me with some information that Sean Spicer was, for a couple years, the one who wore the Easter Bunny outfit.
The White House. Yeah, he was the White House Easter Bunny for at least 2 years.
So that was so apropos that Melissa McCarthy, because at first people I heard say, oh, yeah, it's just Easter, so they're throwing him in the suit. But he used to be the Easter
yeah.
Bunny.
Yeah, there was some background to that.
God, she looks just like him.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, It's very funny.
Well, what a great weekend.
It was unbelievable. We also met, really quickly, Jesse Tyler Ferguson from Modern Family. He was not at Saturday Night Live. He was just walking down the street, and we talked to him for a little bit.
Which one is that?
Very nice guy. He plays Mitchell.
Oh, I love him.
With the red hair, the thin guy with the red hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a real, very nice man.
You just said hi to him as he was walking down the street?
I said, that I think that's Jesse Tyler Ferguson from Modern Family. So Reese right away goes, Jesse, can we just take a quick picture? Yeah, sure. So he took a picture with Reese and everything. It was really nice.
You're going to move to New York now.
No.
Aren't you? You're going to room with your daughter.
No. Maybe. Possibly. All right. We must take a break. And then there's more show. Steve has the news in just a minute. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and it's Easter Monday. We should have taken the day off.
Right. Too late.
Yeah, it is too late.
That's all right.
We just watched a trailer for this new documentary called American Dream, and we have the subject of the documentary. We'll let him explain. Adam Shepard on the line with us. Adam, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You are a very brave man, Adam. From what we just saw, if what we just saw is representative of this whole documentary, you're a very brave man.
Listen, Bill, you call it brave. My lovely wife, Ivana, calls it crazy.
No. I would agree with her, Adam.
All right, in a nutshell, we said that you're a subject because why don't you explain the concept of this documentary, American Dream? Because to me, I would roll up into a ball and just feel sorry for myself.
And just call home? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The premise was that I would be blindfolded and driven to a random city up to 16 hours away and then let out at that city, blindfold off with just $25 and the clothes on my back to see what I could accomplish, what kind of net worth I could accrue in 30 days. The name of the documentary is American Dream, and I think that kind of encompasses, you know, what most people would describe as the start of the American Dream. It's starting over from scratch. And so it sounds a little bit like a drinking story, drinking game gone wrong, but it was all very organic the way it emerged.
Adam, did you come up with those rules, those specifics, or did somebody else determine those?
No, it was me. I read a book called Nickel and Dimed, where Barbara Ehrenreich, very popular book, Barbara Ehrenreich had basically written, in my opinion, on the death of the American Dream. And so I read that book, and I wanted to, you know, just basically, Bill, go out and have a discovery for myself. And so I just wanted to take it all the way down to the grassroots. What would be the best way that I could make this discovery? And this is what I came up with.
I can't even imagine. First of all, I don't like to cut the apron strings, so I wouldn't want to be blindfolded and taken up to 16 hours away. That's first and foremost. Second of all, $25 and the clothes on your back is not a lot to have. So you have to talk to people. You have to sell yourself without giving too much away. You're basically approaching people and saying, do you have any work you need me to do?
Yeah, and I'll tell you one striking encounter that we had along the way, and because you're exactly right, exactly what you're saying. I mean, you've got to rely on basically the kindness of strangers to give me work and to give me the opportunity to succeed. The first day, I took off the blindfold. I went to a convenience store. I bought an orange with my first 97 cents. I asked the clerk which city I was in, and he kind of confusedly told me you're in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so here I go on this journey, and I went across the street. And I approached this homeless guy, and I asked him, where's the library, you know, because I wanted to get on the internet, where's the library, where can I find day labor? I just was kind of trying to get the lay of the land. And throughout the course of this three-minute conversation, we get to the very end, and he could see that I was a little down and out of my luck. And he offered me, he said, listen, I've got $4 left, here you go. And of course I didn't take it. Now, what you have to understand is he had no idea he was on camera. I had these hidden eyeglass cams. My cameraman was out of the scene. He was 50 yards behind me. So this guy, very authentically, he had nothing to his name except $4, basically, and he offered that to me. So yeah, you're talking, Wendy, about the kindness of strangers and people helping me along the way, and that's what this really emerged as, were people that were helping me out.
Adam, who determined that what you would do throughout this was look for work? Because a lot of people would think to themselves, well, I think what I'll just do is ask people if they've got a couple of dollars to spare or coins to spare. So why the decision to work your way through this?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the thing is, Bill, this was never about, oh, how much money can I get? What can I accrue? This was a personal challenge for me about what can I earn. So I think I would have been letting myself down. Gosh, that's a great question. I haven't heard that question, but I think ultimately I would have been letting myself down. If people are just giving me things and I'm not earning it, then to me that's not the American dream. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very much so.
It was just a personal experience.
I was telling Bill off the air, there's this guy in our neighborhood who kind of goes door to door and says, do you have any work that you need from me? I can clean your gutters. I can do lawn work. And a lot of people hire him, and he keeps coming back and getting more business because he wants to work and he wants to feel of value. He's not just asking for a handout. He wants to do the work for the money.
And don't you feel ultimately, Wendy, I mean, this is how I feel about people like that, that you want to help him.
Yes.
He's not coming and asking for sandwiches and free things. He's saying, look, I mean, I'll drink out of the hose and maybe toss me an apple once in a while, but I'd like to work for some nominal wage. And the thing is, guys like that, he's not going to be doing that forever. He's going to do it for a year, 2 years, whatever his plan is. And he knows he's got these goals, this journey that he's on to work his way out of that. And I think that's what's special about those kind of people. And the thing is, in this country, in your neighborhood, there's just that one guy. But in this country, there are millions of guys like that that are going after it. And I think that's what's special about what we've got going on in the United States.
We're talking to Adam Shepard. The new documentary is called American Dream. You can visit AmericanDreamDocumentary.com for all the information. Adam, the focus was on day labor, and that was intentional too, right? You didn't want a full-time job. You just wanted something day-to-day.
That's right. My gosh, you guys have this entire film figured out. You've watched is a 2-minute trailer. Wow. No, that's exactly right. I you know, because ultimately, if I were going to do this for a year, 2 years, 5 years, I mean, I'm going to find a full-time employment. I'm going to find a job. For me, it was just the short-term goals. How much money can I get on a Monday? And then what can I do on Tuesday to kind of build on that and earn from one day to the next? So I think a full-time job was beyond the scope of this. And also it was way more interesting to meet Pete and Micah and Charlie and these guys that I worked for that have some pretty fascinating stories to tell themselves.
I don't want you to give anything away because I want people to see American Dream. But so you start with $25. You spend 97 cents on your first food item, an orange. When you make money, do you pay for money to sleep somewhere? How do you eat? Weren't you hungry?
Yeah. And it's funny. You would think I would have had this grand plan on how all this was going to play out. What happens is you ultimately, there you are, and you go hour to hour, day to day, and you just, these different, the logistics of all this emerges for you. And so for me, I got on Craigslist. I found a guy who rented a room for $100 a week. And so the first 3 days for me was donating plasma, shoveling, and hedging bushes so I could get my first purchase was an orange. My second purchase was a Justin Bieber backpack. Don't judge me. It was on sale. And then my next purchase was a cell phone. And once I had the cell phone, then I had a little cash extra. But anyway, I was mobile. So it was just about building one on top of the other. And eventually I was indoors, and eventually I was eating a little bit better. So the first 3 days were the hardest, but it got easier along the way.
You mentioned your wife a little while ago, Adam, which you said that she believes this to be crazy. I'm guessing she was supportive about parts of it, but a little leery about others, huh?
Yeah, well, and if you saw a picture of my wife, Bill, you would slap me with the back of your hand for leaving her for 30 days. But she felt like this was going to be a great journey for me, and I obviously felt the same way because my life had gotten pretty cushy. I mean, I don't have money, but everything was going well for me, and I kind of had forgotten what it was like to shovel. And so it was good for me to get out and do this, but I think for both of us, this is not an experience we would ever, and I'm not going to get gushy here on your show, but it's not an experience we would ever want to have again.
Yeah.
Because just, you know, a journey like this, I mean, you have your significant other, and that's your best friend, and you want to have this journey with them. So I think being away, it was great for me to have this challenge, but being away from her was not easy for either of us.
All right. And something that I'm curious about, what did you learn about people in general during your experience?
Yeah, I think ultimately, at the end of the day, this really validated that there are bad people and good people in the world. I mean, that's how it's always been. It's how it'll always be. And for me, I was able to seek out and find those good people. And so it really validated and just kind of bypassed the negative influences. And so it really just validated that there are those good people. And when we step outside of our little comfort zone, I mean, come on, Wendy, I meet this frickin' guy who's a homeless guy. And he offers me $4. I mean, I never would have had that experience necessarily in my quote unquote old life. So when we step outside of our comfort zone, that's when we can meet some really fantastic people that make a positive impact on our life.
That's a really beautiful moment.
I know this is just a guess, Adam, but do you think that Knoxville was representative? If you had been dropped off in another city, do you think it would have been a fairly even experience no matter where you went?
100%. 100%. Yeah. To me, this is the United States, and I'm not saying United States versus the world, but I'm saying that in the United States, we have this, to me, which is a fantastic system. I don't think I would have necessarily had the same experience in Honduras, Nicaragua, parts of Africa, Asia. I've traveled quite a bit around the world, and there are wonderful people around the world. But just the sentiment, the feeling in this country, you know, it's to me, it's unparalleled. And I love to travel and get beyond our borders. But I always just love coming back here because it's a special place. So yeah, regardless of the city. Yeah, in the United States, I'm going to have a similar experience where I meet good people and bad people, and I can choose who to interact with.
Although I'm thinking if you landed in L.A., it would have been a completely different documentary.
It may have been.
Doesn't it seem like
maybe.
It?
Yeah. Wait, what was that? What did you say?
If you landed in L.A., I just feel like people wouldn't have been as kind and as helpful.
You know, I don't know. It's hard. I actually live out here now in L.A., and I really don't disagree with you, and I understand that in these bigger cities, New York, where you guys are, in Chicago and L.A., you know, people are grinding, they're hustling. In Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, people are just hanging out and just loving life. So maybe there is that, but I, honestly, like Bill was saying, I mean, I've encountered the same dynamic out here in L.A., that there are good people, and there are those that are just kind of head down and don't want to have anything to do with you. So would it have been busier? Would it have been a little bit more of a hustle? Yeah, sure. But at the same time, I'm going to find the right people to talk to, and I might have to bypass a couple of negative influences along the way.
It's a story of hope. I'll give you that. American Dream.
Yeah, it really is. And, Adam, if people want to see American Dream, their best bet is to do what? How can they see it?
It's on Amazon and it's on iTunes. The trailer that you guys watched is at AmericanDreamDocumentary.com. So that's the best place to go check that out.
Very good. And you, do you have a follow-up project already in the works? What are you doing next?
Oh, my gosh. Just the idea of proposing another project to my wife right now is a terrible idea. So
take a breather.
I'm going to take a little while and enjoy it. Yeah, take a breather and enjoy this one for the time being, but I'm sure there will be something in the future.
Good.
Keep us posted, will you?
I will indeed. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Adam. That's Adam Shepard. And again, the documentary is called American Dream. Visit AmericanDreamDocumentary.com. The information's there. We'll take a break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I'm curious about a question you just asked Adam Shepard, the documentarian who made American Dream, in which he is given $25 and blindfolded and put in a vehicle and they just drive him somewhere. And all of a sudden, he's got to survive. He's got to get back to home base. And I think a crew $1,000. Was that the goal? I think he had to come back with $1,000.
I thought he was just going to try and find out the most he can get. But yeah, that sounds like a good goal.
So you asked him the question, would this have been a different story in Los Angeles? How come? Why'd you pick Los Angeles?
Bill, I don't know what it is, but I just feel like, you know, Knoxville, Tennessee, as he mentioned, there's not a lot of hustle and bustle going on.
Yeah.
And I just feel like people are quick to lend a hand.
Yeah.
I feel in Chicago, there are people... We're just nicer here. L.A. to me is just a lot of celebrities, a lot of transients going there, trying to make it in the business. And I just don't see them being as
hospitable.
Yeah, I just don't.
you know, I see stuff every day that amazes me. A week ago on a train ride home, there was a woman there with three kids, and the conductor came by and asked for the tickets, and the lady didn't have any train tickets. She just didn't. So the conductor was getting a little worked up, and he goes, well, ma'am, you know the rules. You just can't ride the trains for free. That's not how it works.
Ask United about that.
And right. He goes, let's act out a little scene to illustrate my point. So a guy on the train, as he's doing this, just jumps up and he goes, oh, I got this, and just pays for the woman and the three kids' train fare. And I thought to myself, that's above and beyond the call of duty. He wasn't looking for any.
You know what you should have thought?
What?
Why didn't I do that?
I did think that.
Because I've been behind someone at a Walgreens counter, and they're short money. It was an elderly gentleman.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just don't have it. And the clerk was like, well, you're going to have to put something back. I'm like, what's the difference here? Here, what do I owe you?
Yeah.
And the guy was just so grateful. I mean, I wouldn't do that to everyone, but there's sometimes you just got to help somebody.
And when you see it, don't you say to yourself, well, there's a lesson to be learned that person didn't even hesitate. Like, I wasn't hesitating. I'm just thinking, oh, no, what's going to happen next? Which is not the right answer. The right answer is.
That's the difference between you and a nice person.
Well, now keep in mind, I only get $20 a day.
Oh, my God. I don't
want
to hear about it.
I was down to my last $6 or $7.
Don't you have a debit card?
No, I do not have a debit card. Look at me. Would you give me a debit card? What bank would give me a debit card?
No, the bank gives you a debit card. Your wife doesn't give
you
one.
I'm not allowed to have a debit card.
I'll be honest with you. I very rarely have cash on me, so if you're listening, robbers,
right,
you'll waste your time.
Go elsewhere.
And I won't give you my PIN.
What is your PIN?
1234.
Oh.
I never have cash on me. I really don't. Very rarely.
It's a strange thing. When I don't have any money, I'm very aware of it, but I never have more than the $20. I mean, sometimes I'll...
What if it's an emergency? You need to have... Do you keep a spare in your sock?
No.
You cannot... I cannot believe...
I have a credit card, but I've been advised...
Well, that's just for emergencies.
Just for... Yeah.
It's like teaching my teenage boys how to use their first debit card.
Yeah, I know. I know. But it's better. I'm actually the one who said to my wife, I shouldn't have access to too much, because I'm very impulsive. I see stuff every day, and I say to myself, I wouldn't mind having a fountain. Like, what I see stuff and I go, that'd be cool to have. And then sometimes, like, I used to just buy stuff. I go, I would like that, and I'll buy it.
Well, some things you are entitled to buy.
You know that store Brookstone?
Yeah.
All right. One time, they had a giant life-size statue of Superman at Brookstone, and I was by myself.
Is that why you don't have a credit card anymore?
That's the turning point. I almost bought that. I called my wife and I said...
You asked her?
Yeah. That was both the biggest mistake and the smartest thing I ever did. Because I go, it's so cool. It's a life-size Superman, and he's in a Superman pose. It looks really good. We could have this. And she goes, no, oh, no, we can't have that. So that's when the money changed.
Here's the difference between you and my husband, who just is a Star Wars collector. We were at a garage sale, and out in front of the house, there was a 3 to 4 foot tall Yoda holding a garage sale sign. And I said, Jim, did you ask the guy how much Yoda is? And he goes, I'm sure it's not for sale. I'm like, why wouldn't you ask him? And Dylan was with us.
Yeah.
Dad, you got to ask.
Yeah.
He never asked. I would have bought it for him.
No, because he's smart enough to know that the price is negotiable. It's probably affordable. And then all of a sudden, you got a 4 foot Yoda somewhere in your house. Do you want that?
We have a Star Wars room.
I
what's the difference?
Yeah, I guess. Like with the Superman, I thought in our front hallway
all
when
right.
people come in.
We need to take a break. A quick little break, then we'll come back with news. It's. Bill left the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Billy the kid.
Yeah, it's me.
And Wendy here on 720 WGN.
Steve, thanks. Can I ask you a quick question?
You may.
I may have understood this incorrectly. That happens from time to time. You just announced the winner of the Boston Marathon, and it was a woman's time, but said that a man has not won yet?
No, the men have not finished yet. The men start an hour later.
Oh,
they stagger the times.
Why couldn't a woman beat a man?
I don't know that that's ever happened in the Boston Marathon.
That woman could beat just about any man listening right now, or she could beat any man listening.
The men's time is usually
quicker,
half an hour to 40 minutes ahead of the women's times for the marathon.
Okay.
Usually. Because I didn't know that they staggered the times.
I didn't either.
All right.
But, yeah, so that's the deal. They stagger the times.
And it's almost always a Kenyan who wins the Boston Marathon, or Ethiopians tend to do well, too, for
some
reason.
They have a very strong Ethiopian population in Boston, so a big market to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and there was a woman, Catherine Switzer, who broke the racist gender barrier 50 years ago. I remember seeing the footage of this. She's running in the marathon, and she was chased by a jacketed official, and they wanted to get her out of the race because she was a woman, as she ran it on April 19th, 1967.
So even in the 60s, women couldn't run in the Boston Marathon?
I guess not. And she said, her quote is, "There was a split second when I thought maybe I should step off the race and go home. But then I thought if I did that, no one would believe women can do this. I'm finishing on my hands and knees if I have to."
I'm looking at the previous winners, and the first time they list a man winning the Boston Marathon is in 1897. That would be, everyone together, John J. McDermott, with a time of 2 hours and 55 minutes and 10 seconds. So that was in the 1890s, 1897, 1898. It's different guys winning it pretty much every year until John Jack Caffrey came along from Canada in the early 1900s and started winning it regularly. But the first women's time, as you just pointed out, 1966, Bobby Gibbs of the United States won it for three straight seasons, 66 through 68. And then Sarah Mae Berman won it for 3 years, also from the United States.
The men's final is just in. Kenya's Jeffrey Kirui.
Mm-hmm.
K-I-R-U-I, pulled away from American Galen Rupp to win.
Oh, we were right there,
so
the Americans.
Close.
And what's the time?
Right now it is 11:11.
Thanks, Steve.
Make a wish before the clock changes to 11:12. What was the winning time?
I don't have that yet.
And what was hers? Because, my God, that is just so long to be running.
Hers was, I'm sorry, I got to find it again, but.
All right, just whenever
it's so
you get
strange
it.
In the early days for both when it was just men, it was almost always somebody from the U.S. who won in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Almost all U.S. people. Every once in a while, you got a Canadian in there, and then in the 1940s, in the 1940s, it was all over the place. In 1943 and 44, it was a Canadian. Then it was somebody from the U.S., John Kelly. Then it was somebody from Greece, then South Korea, then Sweden, then Japan, then Guatemala, then Finland, almost every year. But if you look over the last 25, 30 years, it's Kenya almost always, Ethiopia almost always, and then Lee Bong-ju in 2001 of South Korea was your winner. And then the same thing for women. It was all U.S. women forever. And then in 1985, it became very global.
Well,
New Zealand, West Germany.
It probably wasn't much of an international sport, right?
Right.
And then,
right.
So Edna's winning time was 2 hours, 21 minutes, and 53 seconds.
That's not bad.
God, you could fly to Florida in that.
Right.
I mean,
but they ran 26 miles.
Congratulations.
Plus. That's tough.
Can you imagine running for that long?
No, I've done 16 miles is the most I've ever run, and then I couldn't walk for 4 days afterwards. It just, my legs just stopped. Like, once I stopped running, my legs just went, we're done. Do what you need to do. We're
out
of it.
Did it feel like you were still running when you stopped?
Yeah, for a little while, but I honestly, because I, you know, you're supposed to train for these. Did you know?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that at the time. So I didn't. I ran every once in a while. I'd run a mile or two, and then I said, well, let's see how far I can go. And I did 16 miles, and that's not easy. That's not easy.
I can't imagine that. I just would think your legs would feel like they were still moving. Because the same thing happened to me this weekend at Menards.
At the Menards Marathon? Were you in that?
Say that again for me, will you?
You heard it right, Steve. Right.
You did. Please. I cracked myself up.
You ran from the light bulb
to
the bird seed?
No, I have to tell you. You know how they have the moving escalators?
Yeah.
It's a moving ramp at Menards, and it fits your cart on it. And if you line your cart up with the wheels perfectly, you can walk up it and push the cart.
Oh, really?
But I couldn't get it in the groove, and so I couldn't push my cart. So then when I exited the moving ramp.
Yeah.
I had to get my bearings back.
Yeah, you should not be in a marathon. That's the first question they ask you when you sign up for the marathon. Have you ever had an incident at Menards with the cart?
How are you with conveyor belts?
Can I just tell you, I had the most non-traditional Easter, and it was one of the best Easters I've ever had.
You can tell us right after I tell you the winning prize or the winning
time. What was the winning time?
2 hours, 9 minutes, and 37 seconds.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So about...
That's pretty good.
What, 18 minutes quicker than women?
No, more than that. What was the woman's time?
I've given it to you twice. I don't have a...
220,
I think
thought.
It was 221, maybe.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And then 209.
Oh, that's not bad. But that's not bad at all.
He beat Rupp by 21 seconds.
Oh, man. God, after running for that long and someone beats you by 21 seconds.
I'd rather come in a thousandth than second
place. I know.
Wouldn't you?
Well, the odds are in your favor.
All right, so a non-traditional Easter. Can we take a break and talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was really tough,
but
though,
good.
Getting my bearings at Menards, though. I have to tell you that.
That's what I'm hearing. All right.
You get in my head sometimes, and I'm like, I'm going to walk up this escalator with the cart.
Mm-hmm.
I had stuff in it, and I couldn't get it lined up in the groove, so I had to just stand there. And then on the way down, I had it totally in the groove, and I was ready to push my cart the whole way down, and there was someone in front of me who wasn't moving.
So you know what these marathon runners go through, right? It's the same thing. All right, we'll talk about this, and if you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We were talking about the Boston Marathon, and a woman came in at about 220-something, and a man won at 209.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah.
And I just keep thinking, 2 hours and 20 minutes, wow, you could be doing so many other things other than running.
Sure.
It just seems like a really long thing. Hi, Tina.
Hey, Wendy, how you doing?
I'm exhausted just thinking about running for 2.5 hours.
Well, you should try walking for 10, because that's what I did for the Avon Breast Cancer Walk. The first day is always a marathon, 26 point, you know, same length as a marathon. And you're walking for like 10 hours.
It's a great cause, Tina, and I admire you and think you had a great accomplishment. But wowie, wow, wow.
Yeah, and you have to train for it, just like for a running marathon. And a lot of people don't realize that because you think, oh, it's just walking. But when you're walking that length of a time, like, you have to get your feet used to it and everything. And then when you get back at the end of that 26 miles, then you're camping out overnight, and you have to walk, like, another 3 or 4 miles around the camp to get all your stuff and get fed and whatever. And then you get up the next day and you do 13 miles. So,
wow.
But it's an amazing experience. I've done it, like, 5 times. The first one I did was actually a 60-mile one from Kenosha to Chicago. So
my goodness.
Yeah.
Now, did you have breast cancer or someone you loved? Because obviously...
I had, not myself, but I had two mother-in-laws, actually. My husband's mother died of it. And then his stepmom got it. And then I have a lot of friends that have had it. So,
well, keep it up. Good work.
I do it. Yeah, thank you. I love you guys.
Oh, thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Tina.
Take care.
Bill, remember the second place winner came in at like 20 seconds under?
Yeah, just missed it.
And what was your famous quote? I'd rather come
in a thousandth than second place.
Daryl, you can relate to this?
Well, I sure can. Good morning, Bill and Wendy.
Hi.
I run 5Ks. And last year I ran the race to Wrigley, which is a really great route through the neighborhood, and you finish up running through Wrigley Field. And I came in second in my age category.
Congrats.
And the person who beat me by 0.3 seconds.
No.
Did you break his kneecaps?
Well, what's interesting is you don't know who's beating you, because it's when you cross the start line that your chip time starts. So he may have been 5 minutes ahead of me, or he could have been 10 minutes behind me. But that was bad enough with the 0.3 seconds. Then the next day when I was checking times, I found out it's a guy I knew.
Even worse.
And so had I seen him, I probably would have tried to edge ahead of him just a little.
Do you mind me asking how old you are, Daryl?
I'm 76.
God love
you. That's so good that you're still doing 5Ks. Have you done anything higher than a 5K, Daryl? Or is that your limit?
No, because I just started running maybe 10, 15 years ago, and so I just keep it at 5K. If I started running sooner, I probably would have at least done half marathons.
Yeah.
Because they're reasonable. But, boy, I admire those people who run the halves and the fulls.
Yeah, but when you said you won in your age group, I had to ask, and congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. At 76.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Well, number one, there aren't too many people in my age group. And number two, we don't all run that fast, but it's pretty fun.
Well, thank you for calling, Daryl. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
Take
Love
care.
The show.
Oh, thank
so
you, Daryl.
Thank you.
Wow.
Man, I
How
suck.
Ambitious is that?
I totally have no ambition.
Kylie's running a half marathon in June. There's one here in Chicago that she's running, and she wants me to do it with her, but I can't, because of tennis, I don't want it to mess up my knees. You know what I mean?
Running's not good for your knees.
It's really not. That's what I keep emphasizing to everybody who will listen.
Bill, I'm intrigued by caller number five. Would you please introduce caller number five?
Well, caller number five is the Big O, but it's not our Big O. It's not Orion. There are other Big O's. Hi, Big O.
Hi, how you doing?
What's up?
You got to watch somebody do an Ironman triathlon.
I have. It's grueling to watch it.
I can't believe a human body can go through that punishment.
The body's not meant for that, quite
right.
Honestly.
Exactly. My son is 52 years old, was totally didn't do sports or anything as a kid, was not athletic, and then went in the Army and made a career out of it. And I watched him last year do it in Louisville, Kentucky, along with other people, and I said, this is impossible. After 114 miles on a bicycle, he jumps off the bicycle and strips off the clothes and grabs this thing and starts running for 26 miles. At 2:30 in the afternoon, I said, I can't even walk six blocks, let alone run. And at exactly 12 hours and 2 minutes, he crossed the finish line.
Wow.
12 hours.
I could not believe it.
Right.
Human. And then I meet up with his friends last winter in Florida, and we do that all the time. You know, it's just, he hangs around with a bunch of guys that are really into this stuff, and they will, before they go to work in the morning, they'll ride 100 miles.
Good Lord.
That's crazy. Before work? Just have a bowl of Fruit Loops and call it a day.
Is this the little O we're talking about who did this?
Yeah. It's the junior. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Big O. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Are you familiar with either a super marathon or an ultra marathon?
No.
This is where they run between 50 and 100 miles. Like 26 isn't enough to run. They run like these all-night things. It's like a 24-hour run. I don't get it.
I don't understand
That's
it.
That's a lot.
Listen, I know there are people who do set goals. I don't.
Yeah.
And I realize it's an accomplishment and an achievement.
Yeah.
But that is too big.
That's too much.
It's too much.
We're not built for that.
It just seems, right. You know, you do the marathons. How long was the Boston Marathon?
They're all 26 and a half miles.
All right, that's even a little too long
that's
for me.
Lot.
But why would you go beyond that?
26.2, is that sound right?
It's
over 26. It's just over 26. Your body, I mean, I know people do it, and I applaud them for doing it, but you'll blow a fuse at some point. You're not built for that.
I used to work, when I was working valet, people would fly in and stay at the hotel for the marathon, and
yeah.
You'd see them afterwards just like hobbling into the lobby looking miserable.
Right.
Is that worth it?
Mm.
I mean, I guess accomplishing something is really
right.
Momentous in your life.
Oh, sure.
But then you do one, you got to do another one. I just
be
don't want to open
with
up the
one. Like the one, I'd go, I did that once, you know?
I know you. You'd want to beat your
score.
Beat
your own score. Yeah, there's that, I guess.
So it just starts the whole ball of rolling.
Yeah.
If they have a marathon where I can roll on a ball, I'll
do it. Yeah. The slugathon. Just be a slug.
Well, no, you have to hold on.
Yeah. We must take a break. We're gonna give you more show, though. News is next, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn.
Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, I just want to tell you that my family and I were in New York over the weekend, and we were in a specialty shop that had a bunch of Zorn memorabilia.
You're stealing my story, I was going to say. Go ahead. This is so ironic.
There were statues of Zorn, which is a Fox television show, various toys that all had, and my wife said, we need to get Eric something.
There you go.
But we didn't. But we thought about
gotta
it.
Listen to Terry. She's so much smarter than you. She's so much kinder than you are.
By far.
I went one step further. Yeah. I was at a comic book store, and I saw a Funko Pop Zorn figure, mm-hmm. and it was in my hand. And then I'm like, $14.99, really?
You're not worth that,
I don't
Eric.
Think so. No, nope. I would agree with that. See, Wendy's smart. That's good.
But it was in my hand.
Are there action figures?
Hey, yeah, there's all kinds of things.
So next time Channel 9 comes out to your house?
Yeah, I'll have a room that has all your name stuff in it.
But put his face on the action figure, like Photoshop it, you know, just print it and tape it on.
I can do that for you.
I think that's going to happen.
I can definitely do that for you.
It's going to happen.
How were the holidays? Good?
They were good. I had an interesting time. I flew out to Boston, mm-hmm. and a guy who I was in high school with, we played on my high school basketball team. We drove back from Boston back to Michigan, and we stopped along the way to see his mom, and I hadn't seen his mom in 20 years.
Wow.
And then we stopped to see my folks, and he hadn't seen my folks in about 10 years.
That's nice.
We used to see each other's parents all the time back in high school. So it was really great to catch up. And,
that's sweet.
You know, his mom's 93, so we're probably not going to be doing that trip too many more times. Yeah. And my parents are in their late 80s, but... it was really a nice trip to do
that. Isn't there something to be said for a road trip? It's always nice to travel by plane because you get there nice and fast, but just seeing the country, just sitting in a car and seeing towns is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, although I got to say the New York Tollway is not, the throughway from Albany to Buffalo is pretty boring. Yeah.
What's it called? There's a freeway in L.A. It's a expressway here. What's it called there? Thoroughfare.
What do they call it? They just call it a highway.
I think it's a tollway that we were on in New York. But anyway, it was. But one of the things that I did on this trip was I uploaded to my dad and to my wife there's a program called Glimpse. Have you heard about this?
No.
Glimpse is about a 10-year-old program. And it's
GLY MPSE.
Yeah.
Heard of it?
Yeah.
It's a locator app, essentially.
You're so hip.
And so what you do is you just you put your location into it and you send message to your contacts mm-hmm. that you want and they can follow you for a certain amount of time, exactly where you are, how fast you're going and so on. Google Maps just came out with one. About a month ago now, and essentially what you do is the same idea. You just like say, hey, here I am, mm-hmm. and you send it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of cool. You know, they could just sort of follow us. Like, they knew when we were stopping for gas. They knew when we were going to be there. It's an interesting program. I mean, I'm really sort of intrigued by it. I think it's for when you're going a long distance or even for shorter distances. If you want to meet somebody somewhere, you're going to run late, you can send them a Google Maps thing or
Glimpse.
Why
don't you just text them?
But you could text them. But this actually lets them follow you so that if you say, like, I'm caught in traffic, I can see where you are in traffic.
It seems like a lot of inventions are made now just to get rid of the element of surprise. Like, we don't want to be surprised by anything anymore.
I hate surprises.
Like call waiting. Remember, like every time the phone used to ring, you go, it could be anybody on the phone. But those days are gone. Now we know who it is on the phone.
And we don't answer.
And you don't answer. You look at it and go, unknown caller. No, thank you.
Right.
But, I think it's a fascinating thing for a trip like this. So that's, so that I don't have to keep texting my dad, hey, we're stopping here.
I'll be there.
He can see when we get to Toledo. We can see when we're coming up to Ann Arbor. So they would know when we're going to get there. I think it's a great thing, but it made me start to think or worry how this could be a problem for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine a situation, a domestic situation where there is a controlling spouse or partner who says, I want your Glimpse turned on. I mean, what happens is you turn it on and you set it to expire after a certain amount of time.
Oh.
The Google Maps thing lets you go up to 3 days. Glimpse usually suggests 4 hours maximum. Someone's not following you the entire time of your life.
But specific is it? Like, could you put this on your kid's account and then just always know where they are? You could do that.
They could
you?
Turn it off pretty easily. Oh. But I mean, you can turn it off easily. But
you're so trusting. It's cute.
I want to know where you are at all times, Eric.
Well, I can say I could have sent you a note. I should have.
You should have.
I should have.
It's rude not to.
And when you were in New York and looking at curios, you could have said. but I can see it. I can see a dark side of something like this, where a controlling spouse would make the other partner like, you got to have this turned on. I want to know where you are at all times. And I don't know how you control, because people carry their phones around. It's not like you're clipping a device to somebody. We willingly carry these things with us, these locators.
Yeah,
and of course, in retrospect, law enforcement can actually track a lot of our movements. That's how they've caught some murder suspects.
Yeah.
With this.
Your
phone was down there where the body was found and so on. But that's not in real time, and that's not just
Why'd
a casual
Why'd you stop killing
thing.
People because of that?
I don't know.
She's done.
I know. Well,
it helped.
It was good. So there are sort of some upsides to that.
Yeah.
But I can really see this being a problem for me. And I'm wondering whether whether other people have discovered this to be a problem, where someone says, you've got to have this turned on, I want to know where you are at all times.
I have done that with my kids, because on an iPhone you can share a location with someone.
Right.
And there are times where I said, share your location, and they surprisingly did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the alternative would be if they didn't, but I said, where are you?
Well, I imagine the alternative could be,
I
take the phone away, or you're not going out.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, it doesn't seem that unreasonable, especially for teenagers. I want to know where you are. It tells how fast you're going, which is a kind of
to know.
Well, you wouldn't, but I can see why. Wouldn't you want to know if your kids are out driving around?
You know what? I don't. This is too much information, and I learned this when your girls were going away to school.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to stay up and worry every minute of every day if I don't let go. At some point, I got to let them do what they do.
Right. No, I agree with that, and I wouldn't use it for any kind of things like that either. But I can imagine people doing it, and I don't know how if you're in a situation that's controlling or abusive. You've got to take your phone with you, and I've got to know where you are at all times. And I can see where that could have a real dark side.
Do you remember the debate 5 years ago, 6 years ago, where they said, we've got the technology where we could put a computer chip in people's shoulder or wherever we want to put it, and you will always know where your kids are because there will be a computer chip that will ping anytime we need to. There was a debate whether or not that was a good idea or not. This is kind of a new age version of this, isn't it?
It is, except you don't have to implant it in them.
Right.
Because they'll willingly carry it around because they have everything with them on their phones. I mean, the phone has become this leash that we willingly put around our neck. I could also imagine a situation where an employer says, look, we're paying for your cell phone, or we're paying for your time from 9 to 5. Or
we want to know where you are.
We want to know where you are. Just turn it on until 5. We want to know if you're at lunch where you are. And most of us, most of the time, maybe nearly all the time, wouldn't really care.
Right.
I would care. And I have nothing to hide. But at some point, it's like, mm-hmm. Seriously,
it's
Wendy's been in the bathroom for 5 minutes. I mean, seriously, it can locate you down, because my dad was showing me. He said, look, Google Maps says that you're in our kitchen right now. And I went and looked. I said, actually, but my phone is in the hall, so it's not quite right. But it was close. It was eerily close to where I was. And he said, I can actually see this become having a real dark side.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
This is Tech Mondays with Eric.
Yeah, Tech Mondays with Eric Zorn.
Hey, I got another tech issue that maybe we can bring up.
Can we take a quick break and then? Will it still be in the...
I don't know, but maybe we should.
All right.
Maybe we should.
We'll do a break and then Eric's other issue. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Eric Zorn is here. He's one of the best. He writes for the Chicago Tribune, and he stops by on Mondays, and we talk about whatever's on his mind. What else is on your mind, Eric?
What's on my mind is what just happened in Alabama. Did you hear about this? The governor, Robert Bentley, had resigned a week ago today, and he was caught in a sex scandal. A politician, an American politician, caught in a sex scandal.
Hard to believe.
Can you imagine that? But
nope.
But it did happen, Bill. But the interesting thing about this, speaking of tech, was that his wife, Diane, caught him cheating because he was texting with his paramour. They printed some of these, but
and he hit the wrong number.
I can't take my eyes off of you, things like that.
Mm.
No, but what happened was that I don't know if you guys said, you're not Apple. You're Apple,
yes.
Though, right? In Apple, when you have like an Apple account, your texts will go to your phone. but they'll also go to your iPad. You ever have this happen?
Yes.
Where, like, sometimes you'll, like, your iPad will ring instead of your phone. It's
right. Just this weird thing you can disconnect it.
You can disconnect it. You have to be a little tech savvy. Our poor governor was not tech savvy.
No. Oops.
And the texts that his that he was exchanging with his mistress were showing up on his iPad.
Oh. While she's watching movies or playing Candy Crush.
Well, she's got the iPad. And so she was, I guess, taking screenshots of some of these to preserve as evidence to use against him. But it was one of those things where this apparently happened to Gwen Stefani also, where she caught her husband, I think it was, cheating with a baby.
Oh, Gavin Rossdale and the nanny or something like that.
Yeah, let's say we're not sure because the license, you know, you could lose the license if we got it wrong. But let's say a famous singer and a caught her husband. But it's really interesting to me how you got to be careful with these devices. That, you know, they think, oh, this is so convenient. Well, they'll all be linked and you can be on your iPad, you're on your phone, and the text will show up. Well, you know, dun, dun, dun.
Convenient, but life-destroying at the same time.
But I'll tell you, most people, like, I never gave it a second thought if somebody was using my iPad and I was texting something because I don't have anything to hide.
See, Wendy, you're so wholesome. That's the thing. That's the adjective that, you know.
Wholesome.
I wouldn't. You're wholesome. That's weird. I wouldn't consider myself wholesome. But that's something I think the majority of people aren't planning on using it for.
Yeah,
extramarital affairs.
Of course, I lead a pure and blameless life, just like you. And mm-hmm. So I do think this is an interesting phenomenon to see. And Johanna, my wife, she's like, "That's great! I'm glad those guys are getting caught. That's terrific." Like,
it is kind of nice.
A little bit of glee in it.
Did you see this governor's press conference to announce to his constituency that he was stepping down? He was so calm and cool and collected, just like, well, this is what happens. Nothing out of the ordinary here.
Serve this great state of Alabama in a new way. I'm taking stepping down in order to. It was like I didn't even really mention what was going on.
Right.
I think it was just one of those things where. And he's an older gentleman.
Yes,
so
he is.
A little bit confused by the technology these days, the kids these days. Ask Bridget Carey about this because.
You should have used Morse code instead of texting.
Or semaphore flags. That would have probably been safer.
Right.
But you know these people are undone by this technology all the time.
Yeah.
Texts. You always hear about it's really routine. You'll read in the advice columns. I was looking for something on my boyfriend's phone and he tackled me. And then later he didn't want me to see my phone.
And
so maybe I'm reading the racier advice columns. But you know, and then later when he was asleep, I looked at his phone and saw that he was this technology can
ruin you.
It can. And sometimes I have sent the wrong text to people. Like if you're involved in a texting situation with someone and then a new person texts you, all of a sudden that's on top.
Oh.
And so I have texted wrong information. It's like, whoops, sorry, that wasn't for you. So just be careful what you text.
The technology catches up to you. Just the other day when I was on this trip, our tax guy had a bunch of last-minute questions for me. He sent them all to me. I was in the car, so I wanted to forward them to Johanna, who was back in town. And so but instead of hitting forward reply, I just said, "Can you handle this? Can you handle this, please? I'm in the car." So I'm imagining this, our tax guy going, "Well, that's a little impertinent. You know, I just sent him some questions. He tells me to handle it." But
tax day is tomorrow, right?
No,
the 18th.
Oh, is it tomorrow? I thought it was today, for some reason.
No, they keep changing it.
Because of Easter, and then they give you a break because it's, I don't know why it wouldn't be today, but it's not.
Because last year it was weird, too. It was like.
It was on a weekend, right? It ended on a weekend.
The 15th was on a weekend, but they gave you extra, but not, it should be one extra day. That's it.
Yeah. I'll take it. I'm all right with
it. Do you do your own taxes?
No, I gather all the information and then bring them to an accountant.
Right, because who do you expect to gather it?
Well,
everybody does that.
No, there's people. I've got a couple of friends who have like a bag of just receipts, and they just hand them the bag of receipts. But I don't do that. I go through all the work. I just don't know how to plug it into the forms.
Yeah, I don't either.
Apparently, the new tax software is really good. It just basically asks you questions. It doesn't make you fill out
the
forms. Yeah. You know what else is on my mind? This Gallup poll. We have time for that?
The Donald Trump one?
Or do we have to wait?
We have 2 minutes.
Two
minutes is plenty for this. Gallup released a poll this morning. Majority in the U.S. no longer thinks Trump keeps his promises. They looked at the change since early February in how the public looks at Trump. In February, 62% of the people thought Donald Trump keeps his promises. Now it's 45%. Now, 45% seems really, really high to me.
62% seems even more jarring.
Yes, at that point, right. Yeah. Well, but at the time, he had been president for a week.
Uh-huh.
is a strong and decisive leader. He's off 7 points from 59 to 52. Can bring about the change his country needs. He had 53% in February, down to 46.
Yeah.
Cares about people like you, was 46 in February, now down to 42. Can manage the government effectively, was 44% in February, now down to 41%. So this guy's not doing very well. And that's going to it's gonna make it really difficult for him to do things like he wants to overhaul the tax code.
Right.
He wants to get the government to give him money to build his wall.
Yeah.
When you have a lot of, I mean, this is one of the big problems he had, I think, with healthcare, which was that he just didn't have a popularity, didn't have the juice anymore.
Yeah.
His, you know, the Republican lawmakers we needed weren't quaking in fear of him turning on them because they say, this guy's not popular. He doesn't have any strength. So I thought these poll results were interesting today. So
what was the poll you found, though? You found an exact opposite one.
His approval rating had gone up since the actions in Syria and Afghanistan. I had thought I heard somewhere on a news. See, that's what you get for listening to another station.
They have it around 40%, and it was up from, I think it bottomed down at like 36.
I thought it would hit the 50 mark today.
The 50 mark?
That's what I thought.
Well, it could have been in a different poll, too, okay. Because there are several different tracking polls that keep track of his favorite. And it depends, of course, on exactly how you ask the question.
But this was just by virtue of the fact that there was a military strike, that would have increased his popularity that dramatically?
Well, it came up awful quickly.
Well, if you remember when George H.W. Bush attacked from Kuwait into Iraq, or to protect Kuwait, attacked Iraq, his popularity was up at like 91%. And that's when everybody thought, well, there's no way anyone can beat him. And that was actually the opening that this, you know, small state governor, Bill Clinton, had to get it, because there were a lot of people who said, well, we could never beat this guy. He's way too popular. So people like Mario Cuomo, who were going to run, just said, look, like they sort of backed off.
They
couldn't do it. But these poll numbers do rise and fall a lot on exactly what you're talking about, Wendy, these military strikes.
Yep.
Have you found this yet?
Yes. Trump touts poll showing 50% approval rating. President Trump on Monday, today, touted a Rasmussen poll. Showing his poll approval rating at 50%.
Well, Rasmussen is known to be friendly to Republicans in terms of polling. Gallup is the gold standard for job approval. They've been doing it for years and years, and they do it with a tracking thing so that it rolls over, I think, every
year.
You know who knows about this stuff? A guy named Steve Bertrand.
Never heard of him.
Well, you should meet him.
We'll see if we can find somebody with that name next. Eric, thank you so much. Appreciate it. It's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find somebody named Steve Bertrand. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.